Jai Ma. So first let's be clear about some of the terms we use, as you rightly said, very loosely. So the word spiritual is used in three senses. One is that, well, all is spirit, there is nothing else but the spirit. But in manifestations, the spirit is disclosing itself layer by layer, level by level, unfolding itself, and therefore the term spiritual is used in a hierarchical sense. For instance, for the cat and the dog, human is spiritual. They look up to us just like we look up to the gods. For the human, the gods would be spiritual, and for the gods, there are layers of gods and there would be something still beyond. So this is one way of looking at the word spiritual. The second way is that which pertains to the spirit. So what really is the spirit? Spirit is the radiance or the atmosphere of the Lord. That's how the mother puts it. I haven't found a more beautiful description. So what is the atmosphere or radiance of the Lord? It's like you have the sun around which there is the whole corona, which is there from the sun, of the sun, covers the sun all around. So spirit is considered as the atmosphere of the Lord. Means there is something still greater from which it has emanated. And the third sense in which the word spiritual is used, and that is that beyond our mind, for the human consciousness, there are layers and layers through which the self, the divine self, gets reflected. And so each of these layers beyond the mind is regarded as, in Sri Aurobindo's terminology, spiritual mind, but in traditional yoga it would be spiritual. So the word spiritual means any of these layers the consciousness ascends and takes as a resting ground, begins to operate from there, or enters there in a state of trance or samadhi and comes back. So such a person is regarded as spiritual. Whereas someone who is completely living in the human mind as it is and intellectualizes or thinks about the higher things or things pertaining to God, that would not be spiritual, but it would be still a conceptual understanding of the that which is beyond. So this is about spiritual. In three terms we can use it. Then what is realization and what is transformation? So realization is to make real what is yet conceptual. So the divine, one starts with a concept. The divine is, yes, you can equally say he is not. Now this is mind-boggling to the mind, because he does not conform to anything that the human mind can describe or define. Therefore, we'll see often when we speak about the divine, it's in paradoxical terms. So that's because the mind has a tendency to form concepts. That's how it tries to catch. It's a net of concept. And this is all right at a beginning stage, or maybe for some it continues for a long time. But a person may know everything about the divine reality from a conceptual point of view. He may be able to speak about the divine reality. Speaking is a little more difficult, but he can write books. There are books on systems theory, and yet he may not have realized. So realized means to make real what is still conceptual. If I have conception of what the soul is, it is still conception. But when I discover the soul, become one with it, then it becomes real. So there again we have two terms, experience and realization. Experience is like a glimpse. So when I feel some touch of the soul upon my life, some of those qualities that emerge from the soul, when they begin to express within me or within anyone, it's an experience. Similarly with the higher planes, that we may have sometimes a momentary flash like an intuition. It's an experience. It's not yet become the stuff of our being. So there is a difference between experience and realization. So one may experience contact with the divine from far or near is a way of saying, because that which is far is also near. We can say that is farthest than the farthest. And we can equally say about the divine, he is nearer than the nearest. In fact, nearer than our breath, nearer than our life, nearer than our heartbeats, nearer than anything we can conceive. And both these things will be true. So, to make real that which is away is realization. So in yoga we'll hear a word like self-realization or divine realization. What it means is that the divine is no more a concept for the person. He has become real. So then why? What is the difference between realization and transformation, which is unique to Sri Aurobindo's yoga? Now realizing the soul or realizing the divine does not automatically change our nature. What happens? There are two possibilities. One is that we realize, it become real to us, but there are moments when even a realized person can lose contact, and he can probably, when he operates, comes down in life, in real events, certain things can momentarily shake him out of that state. And when he comes back to the normal round of life, he can be a very ordinary person, even worse than ordinary. You see, Rishi Vishwamitra, at what stage of his journey, he is still harboring, jealousies and ambition. What kind of ambition? He wants the label of being a Brahma Rishi. we can see Durvasa getting angry, and yet his words are so powerful. And we have so many stories. Rishi Vasishtha himself, who is such a realized person, and on whom Sri Aurobindo has written a beautiful story, The Ideal of Forgiveness. And yet when his sons are killed by Rishi Vishwamitra, he is not a Rishi then, King Vishwamitra, he is so depressed that he wants to actually drown in the river, which gets his name because when he drowns tied up, the river breaks all his chains. So it's called as Vipasha, because she breaks all the chains. He wants to die, he goes through a state of inner depression. So realization, people have this idea, realized person means now everything that the person does is automatically all suffused with the divine. No. It's possible that he is in a state where he is real, divine is very real, and yet he comes back to this state time to time, but because he has tasted, he has known the divine, he may go back at will. So this is one possibility. Second possibility is he continues to remain in the state of divine realization. He continues to remain in this state of soul, identity with the soul. And yet when he acts upon the world, from there he acts. So what is the problem in doing that? The problem is the instruments are still limited. And we have this classic example of why Sri Ramakrishna had to choose a Swami Vivekananda. Because he says that he is, after all, Swami Vivekananda says that he could create thousands of Vivekanandas like me. And yet Vivekananda becomes an instrument. He becomes his voice, so to say, of what Sri Ramakrishna has realized within. And of course, Sri Ramakrishna is always much greater. That's how Swami Vivekananda himself said, and that's true. So the point is that one may realize, stay in that realization, but when one acts, when one speaks, when one feels, you will feel that, well, this is not only just ordinary, maybe even much less, it's not that the person is not experiencing things, has not experienced things, but difficult to put them into words, difficult to express them in life, because as we know, divine is not, he does not follow a simple either or pattern. Just now we have seen some examples. So all those who realize the divine try to communicate in paradoxical terms, because that's the only way one could try to express. So even when one remains one with the divine, one with the self, soul within, yet the operating system of nature remains what it is. Now, it may be a very brilliant intellect like Swami Vivekananda, wonderful. Or it may be a very, very commonplace intellect, not very developed, and if one has not taken the care to develop it when it comes to expression. I'm using only about intellect. It would apply at every level, at the level of feelings. When we read the life of saints, we will experience it. That how they went through, they were genuinely realized. Read the life of Narasimha Mehta, many others, that they had realized, and yet when it came to leading life and, you know, entering into life, it was so challenging, so difficult. So Sri Aurobindo does not want this. It's like a twilight state. That's how he describes it. Because what is the use? Of course, something of that thing will flow into life when someone has realized. That's how the Kena Upanishad puts it. That he is always carrying, such a person is full of that sweetness, light, it radiates all around. But that's not enough. So transformation now, transformation obviously first one has to realize. But transformation is when the nature is impregnated, inundated, is flooded with the forces of the divine self above, with the soul energies within and the ultimate truth. So it floods the nature, and if the nature is receptive and ready, it prepares and eventually transforms it. So what does transformation mean? It means that beyond the arc of our nature operates within a limited operating system, there is a higher divine supernature. It's just what the Gita says, but the Gita describes it as the divine soul. When Sri Krishna says, my nature, my own nature. Then first he describes the lower prakriti, that this is the eightfold lower prakriti. And then he describes his own nature, which extends into so many ways. So, but that is Sri Krishna's nature. That's the divine supernature, of which para prakriti becomes the jiva. So within jiva, something of that gets reflected through the subhava. But otherwise, the rest of our nature is very ordinary. As we know that, you know, says Durvasa, he could curse. He was not jitakrodhiya. There were rishis who were not jitendriya, like Vishwamitra. It's not that they didn't have the authentic experience. Shobindo does not want that. Because if that is the case, then we'll never be having a divine life upon earth. Because always we'll be divided within a realized soul inside and a nature struggling in ignorance here. Even Sri Krishna ultimately lives with that operating systems are sattva, rajo and tamogun. But you will be free within, you will be dwelling constantly in me, that you is now not the Arjuna personality, but the soul of Arjuna will be always dwelling within. He'll be paap mukt, he'll be bhaya mukt and all that, he'll be jivan mukt. Yet the nature is the same. So what transformation implies is that beyond the range and arc of human possibilities, there is a higher possibility, which is the divine nature. In fact, Sri Aurobindo would tell us that all that we experience in our nature owes its origin to the divine supernature. And this is very interesting. I'll tell you why it is interesting. Normally we talk about mood. And mood immediately, human beings are prone to mood. So we cannot understand why Shiva is going around the quarters, carrying the dead body of Sati and doing vilap. We don't understand that why Sri Krishna suddenly breaks his promise, picks up a chariot wheel and stands face to face between Arjuna and Bhishma and says, you dare not touch him. We don't understand it because what is this? This looks like an ordinary person getting into mood, or Kali when she tramples the corpses of the demon hordes. So there is something called as a divine mood. Even something known as a divine wrath. And what we experience in our little weakness state ultimately owes its origin there. The only difference is there it's moved by the divine impulsion. Sri Aurobindo says the difference between Superman, he compares it to what Shiva does and the Asuras. Why Asuras are dear to him? But he says that, well, Shiva when he destroys, he does it with full compassion and perfect wisdom. Whereas Asuras do it in rage, in revolt, in anger, in ignorance. So it's the same energy, but the energy which at the human level becomes completely distorted. And it applies to almost everything. Even things that we normally would call a taboo in normal life, which includes lust, which includes many other. Even greed has a corresponding movement. The mother speaks of the divine holding the entire creation, drawing it to himself. What is the jealousy? Divine will not tolerate, once you have turned to him, that you ever go here and there or anywhere. He will allow little bit. Beyond a point, he'll pull you and pull you very badly. So when we look at these movements, but the difference is that in the divine, these movements are done with perfect knowledge and this is the perfect power. Whereas when we do the movement, they are in ignorance, at the service of the ego, at the mercy of desire, very limited, and they have very repercussions. Just like in animals, we have something like the human movement, but in a very diminished state. They express, for instance, dogs and cats, when they express their love, they express very differently. And if a snake was to express the love, imagine biting somebody and says, actually, you know, I'm expressing love, what it would mean. So this is the transformation, is the divine supernature. It begins to change our human frequencies, if I use that term, into divine frequencies. Now this is tremendous, because divine nature is infinite. The divine nature is not finite, and we are finite little boxes. We cannot bear. That's why Sri Aurobindo says that when this transformation begins, our nature has to have the wideness and the plasticity to keep on becoming more and more receptive. So more receptive, the more the higher consciousness descends. The more it descends, we should be plastic enough to change, because each descent will bring something new. So now before we come to that, then what is ascension and descent? These are the two main movements of the yoga. Ascent means that we begin to come out of this limited framework of percept and concept in which we are locked. And we begin to look at life afresh. There is a change, literally a change of, Mother uses the word reversal, because it's not just about conceiving things in a new way, but this has a power on every area of our life. It has an impact on the emotions, it has an impact upon our life, it has an impact even upon our body. So as we ascend, we begin to look at this world and operate upon this world in a new way, which is very difficult for someone who has not ascended to understand it. Take for example, just one example, that what happens. So normally we deal with material objects as if they are inanimate. So it's okay, we are also taught you should be detached from it, because they are anyways materially you should not be attached. Now look at Mother's one story. So she is having a handkerchief, and the disciple has given her new handkerchief, and she is using an old one which has been roughed several times. Now look at this story, that the disciple says, Mother, why don't you use a new handkerchief? This is how we'll say, oh, the old one is purpose is over, so you'll throw it away, or if you are very conscious, maybe puts in some recycled waste. But what does Mother say? Mother says, yeah, but you know, it has served me for a long time. So now this inanimate object has served her. They are conscious. And even in her house, when she's arranging objects, she's doing it with a consciousness. They're all conscious. They're living. As she has read the other day, stones quicken. Animals communicate to us. Snakes will communicate. The rats will communicate. You can communicate. You can convey your message to them. It may sound madness, but well, always invariably what sounds madness to the normal person becomes the norm tomorrow. And it is so true. A spiritual person is not, oh, they are rats, let's put rat poison. He'll not do like that. Not because he's feeling a lot of deya. Deya is there, but it's not just out of deya. It's because he looks at it very differently, that well, it's their habitat, how they have come. He'll communicate to the soul of the species of the rat that, look here, it's troubling all of us and we don't intend to harm you. You also don't, you know, please be in your place quietly, silent. And they listen. You can communicate to the elemental energies, communicate with the winds, to the rain, to the sun. Mother uses the word, make friends with the sun. You see, as the consciousness ascends, it changes the entire dealing with this commerce with life. Somebody who hurts you, normal reaction is, oh, dikhaunga, let my time come. Every dog has his day. But what does a spiritual person will look at it, who has ascended beyond the mind? He will say, oh, poor fellow, he must be miserable that he is getting angry, he is filled with hate and anger. So what will you have? The response will be of compassion. So this is how the change begins to proceed. And then when this becomes our normal way of life, it's not that we have to try anything, but this becomes everyday life, then we can say that there is a degree of change which is happening in the system, and that comes when there is a descent. So why descent? When with ascension all these things can happen. There have been saints who have actually experienced like that. So this descent means, now this change normally takes place in some part of the mind, little bit in the heart, in the deeper heart. And yet there are life's lower reaches. So even in the place where, you know, as Shobindo describes, ambitions, and then still below, food, sexuality, where fears in the subconscious, there nobody tries to enter. So even at the best, the saints remain within and the seers climb above and operate from there. So these reaches also, and that's why he uses the word in left hand tantra, they had even tried this but failed because they didn't have the power to do it. So this will enter into even these portions, and these part will continue to experience the change. So descent is that not just in some higher mind. We see in Mother chapter 1, Shobindo says, it's not enough if the higher mind gets touched by the light or the deepest heart. They respond very fast. But then there is the surface heart. There are people whom is very interesting, strange experience. The deepest heart loves none but God. Yet the surface heart may get caught, which is so strange, paradoxical. Then you discover there are two hearts at least in you. One is the deeper heart, which always loves the divine, and the other is the surface heart, which gets caught, entangled in the web of emotions. So it will not do that the deeper heart is open to the divine, the surface heart is at the mercy of every force. So that's why Sri Aurobindo says, nothing changes. My yoga doesn't stop with just this kind of inner change. There must be change of the surface personality in every action, gesture, and it can go to the extent that even the movement of fingers, even the twitching of the eyes, everything can be brought under that larger divine control. So it's a very massive change. And so this transformation has three steps. The first, psychic transformation and spiritual transformation. They normally go together. The supramental transformation comes later. What this psycho-spiritual transformation is described very well in, of course, The Life Divine and Savitri, Book 1, Canto 3. That's what we are reading these days, that what happens to such a person's feelings, what happens to thought, what kind of operating system begins to operate. So the psychic transformation, most of us are aware, but basically that's not the subject today, but the psychic transformation is the first transformation. Why? Because psychic transformation basically orients the nature to the right and the light. So why not spiritual transformation first? Well, there are different people in whom different things start. But the danger is that when these tremendous energies begin to enter, new powers and new possibilities will awaken. And if the psychic transformation has not taken place to a point, one doesn't wait for one or the other, then there is a chance of an aggrandized egoism. Even spiritual ego may come in. Oh, I have this power. Oh, I get intuition. Oh, I can do this. Even healing powers. Many things can awaken inside a person. So psychic transformation puts the nature in the right poise. It automatically brings humility before the divine, gratitude for the divine, love and surrender for the divine. Take for example, if a power begins to develop. So what does a person who has gone through the psychic change does? He quietly offers it at the feet of the mother and says, it's your, you'd use it the way you want to use it. But if one has not done it, and this, for instance, inspiration, intuition, revelation, these faculties begin to come. So a person may, there is a danger of that, which is pointed out in Savitri, when in Triple Soul Forces, when the Divine Mother meets the Madonna of Light, and he says, even if you rain intuition's rays on the human mind, his mind may sink, he may sink with a spiritual ego. That I am a great person, I am a spiritual man, I am greater than others. See, I am having these possibilities which other is not having. So psycho-spiritual transformation go together, and it's always better first to go through the psychic transformation, which brings devotion, surrender, all the other things, gratitude, humility before the divine, basic groundwork is laid. Then start the spiritual transformation. So spiritual transformation, as we know, is the movement of ascension. It can be experienced in two ways. One is literally physical way. Physically, one may feel that the whole body is being pulled upward. Actually, just like when people begin to practice interiorization, coming in contact with the psychic, sometimes they just loll, literally, their very head may, you know, as if they are bending forward, because the entire movement is inside, going inside. And somebody who sees may not understand that why you are not sitting bolt straight. In ascension, just the reverse takes place. Actually, whichever way you are sitting, you don't have to try anything. Automatically, your whole head, spine, everything begins to, as if you, it's not to be done mechanically. You can't feign and imitate before God. It's not like you are sitting bolt straight, that means spiritualization is taking place. But automatically, because the consciousness ascends and pulls the body upward, there is a feeling of being pulled. This one experience. The second is that the eyes feel pulled. So why eyes are feeling pulled? Because the capacity, the organ of sight or the power of sight, it begins to ascend to higher regions and a new sight will begin to develop. So all the power that is invested, it's like you take out from one bank which is very limited and you put it in a bank which is unlimited. So right now the power of sight is invested in the organ of sight. That's what Kena Upanishad describes. Or the power of speech is invested in the organ of speech which is very limited. That begins to get uplifted. And there is a pressure as if the eyes, not only the eyes are being pulled upward, the forehead is being pulled upward, there is a pressure on the forehead. And all this is movement of ascension. Then it also takes, ascension also takes other routes or other experiences which go along with it. The sudden sense of a great wideness. One may even physically feel great wideness. But a wideness which is all embracing. Now of course these are things which are best experienced. But yes, that wideness is so all-embracing that earthly realizations, the universe, it will all appear so small. Everything will appear as a far-off distance. That's the experience some people had when they declared the world as Maya, because nothing means anything anymore. All our relationship changes. That which is going near you may appear miles away. So these are real experiences and they are not, you cannot feign them. So there is a wideness, there is a peace that one experiences during those moments. There is light which one can see, flashes of light, glimpses of light. And of course there is bliss or joy. And these are some of the four main features of this ascension. So what does the descent do? Now this peace that one is experiencing during meditation, when that peace becomes the very stuff of nature, when the mind is untroubled by any kind of affliction because the peace has settled inside the mind, when the heart is not tormented by grief or by anything which normally troubles the heart, I don't know, so many things trouble the heart. Jealousies, for instance, what else troubles the heart? Anger still lower down. Hate, all these things will become foreign to nature. Why? Because there is this higher consciousness which has touched the heart. And that consciousness is full of that joy. One is constantly experiencing this joy. So much so that love, when it descends into the, its higher consciousness, is not only about knowledge. There is a will, there is love, there is truth imagination. Everything that we experience here is there in its origin. So actually, if a human love comes, it may sound very strange, but supposing somebody is experiencing the descent of divine love inside, then if your human love actually comes to your life, you receive it in very different way, but you can never be fully, what shall I say, Ramna, fully into it, because you have tasted, you are constantly tasting this source. So it's like always there is, oh my God, this is nothing, because you are tasting that. And that begins to impregnate the heart, change it into a kind of sweetness, even if life around is crashing, yet that love remains. So it's a very different kind of love altogether. There is no restlessness in that love, no urge to rush to meet normally what all we experience in human love. Even when that love is experienced with a human being, it's never with a restlessness, with a kind of desire, forcing, wanting to have whatever else that happens. Certainly no jealousies, no hatred. It may sound very strange or look very strange to an onlooker, But this is the change which actually takes place. Then similarly, when this joy enters into the life parts, then everyday life becomes a song. It becomes a joy. So who would not want spiritual transformation? You are not waiting for a pay package to get, at the end of the day I got so much money. Even if you got nothing, still you experience that joy inside. And all these ambitions, they change into the urge to serve the divine, to serve more and more and more. That's why serving the divine and work for the divine is so important in this yoga. Because through that work, these lower parts get engaged. If these lower parts don't get engaged in the yoga, then there is always the risk that maybe a deeper heart and higher mind may get touched. But the surface heart and the lower parts, especially the seat of ambition and all desire, it doesn't get touched. Then it has still further and things like sexuality. But the thing is that when it touches these centers, one may also experience resistance, like headaches in the head. One of the things when the descent takes place, some people go through headache. Why? Because there is a resistance. Head is too small. It cannot accommodate this new consciousness. All kinds of experience may come. For example, one is completely may become oblivious of the body, head, everything. Maybe just aware of the head. Nothing of the body is there. And it may, some people get frightened. These are real experiences. That's why these are not topics to so much be discussed as to be lived, that there is only the head, and if there is the slightest fear, where is my body? The experience stops, because it's like that, far above. You experience your head amidst the stars and nothing else is there. You don't know. You don't even care about coming back, because there is no body. You are just that. And it's true that things can happen during that state. So then it comes down, and then you get connected. So all these experiences, which can come in several ways, so certain faculties begin to open and start operating within us as spiritualization proceeds. So what are these faculties? Normally we analyze, reason out to understand anything. There is ifs, buts, for and against. All this goes on in the head. But inspiration, revelation, intuition, these are three very well-known faculties of the Vedic Rishis. They begin to operate. In ascension, one knows it during that point. But they may become, they do become so beautifully operative, not only in the mind. The goddess of inspiration may inspire the heart. And it can be very unnerving, an experience. Intuition, it starts acting in the life parts, in the very body. To that extent that what is to be eaten and not eaten, and it's not based on any of the mental analysis. You may just refuse a food, not because it's harmful physically or otherwise, but just because you become aware of that whole consciousness which is within it. So it's a whole process, a package, as these higher forces begin to descend. Peace in the mind, peace in the heart, one can actually invoke it also. Peace in the heart so that it's untroubled. Peace in the life so that it doesn't get, nothing can really affect it, hurt it in any way. Things like anger become completely foreign to nature. They may rise sometime when you are off guard. For example, when you have suddenly woken up from sleep, or when suddenly something massive happens, anger may strike. That's how it's not like one day this whole thing. This process takes years and years and years, because it's fine tuning of the nature to the divine energies. And divine energies, powers, as we know, they are very, very intense, very tremendous. Maheshwari can suddenly make us so compassionate that even in ordinary life, she makes us so wide and compassionate that in ordinary life, how we operate, that somebody has done this to me, I must do this. But she will automatically give us a deeper understanding about the person. And you will not react like that. Not because you are trying anything. Not because it's an effortless thing. Because there is a transformation which has taken place. So all this goes on. Primarily wideness, peace, bliss. Of course, descent of love, beauty. Descent of beauty takes place. And when beauty takes place, one begins to see the beauty in the ugly. A touch of beatitude all around. Impersonal beauty. I mean, where does one stop with this? It's such a beautiful process. Once we get into it, then there is no end to it. The mystery and marvel of this change. So, beatitude, bliss, even in the most situations where you are supposed to actually feel unhappy, people may consider you as a mad fellow. Say your mama or papa, who loved you and whom you loved, when they leave the body, you are not experiencing any sorrow. In fact, everything is very peaceful and there is a very happy departure. You are literally telling them, okay, go peacefully, be happy. And if somebody sees you, they may actually feel that, are you a mad person? You are supposed to cry. You don't cry when you suffer a loss event. So many things. I mean, I could go on. There is a complete change, wholesale change of nature. Spiritual transformation itself can bring such a massive change. Sexual energies, when they touch these parts, initially the resistances come. As I said, in the mind, if the mind is not ready, doubts may spring up. Strange doubts, which one never knew. Headaches may come up physically. When the heart is touched, suddenly the heart is not able to contain the overwhelming flow of love. So we can imagine what happens with this flood of love which is flowing through the heart. It's literally like a tsunami of tsunamis. One actually experiences like an ocean which is flowing out. I don't know how to handle it. So it takes a time when this new energy is from above, both in terms of degree, in terms of quality, there is a stabilization that has to take place in nature. Otherwise, people can go crazy. I remember one person who was embracing every tree, embracing everyone. He was standing below balcony for hours and then he was brought to me because, you know, people felt he has gone crazy. He said, I am experiencing so much love inside. I said, I understand. Don't go and embrace a woman. You will be inside the prison. Nobody will understand that you are having so much love inside the heart. Learn to contain it. In the beginning, it may be difficult, but slowly one learns. It's like adapting the nature. That's why Shobindu used the word ascent and integration, adaptation, assimilation. Initially, little bit is too much, but slowly, 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 nature begins to receive it rightly, integrate it with the rest of the system, and then each part has to adapt to the other, the mind, the heart, the life. It's a long, long process. It takes decades, sometimes decades just for the psychic transformation. So these are not things which can be done in a hurry. That's why the mother says that this long, long process. But once done, it is done forever. That means when the soul within us departs, so-called depart, because there is nothing like death. Even after psychic transformation or realization, one knows there is nothing like death. You continue with that entire package. As he said about Amrita, he said, I want to continue and I want to help people from there, from these higher realms. So this is the next step of spiritualization or the spiritual transformation, wherein new faculties begin to awaken, new powers. Now it's not that everybody will have the same awakening. Somebody may awaken to an eye of painting. Another person may open to what today are known as occult. Occult powers normally arise when one is going deep within through from the subliminal. The higher powers are not really occult in that sense, though they are occult in the sense that we don't experience them. But they are powers which are divine powers. They are at the disposal of the divine and they can go to an extent that it can literally stop an imminent catastrophe just by the pressure of will. So they are tremendous things, but they awaken, all of them. And then, of course, when one is ready with all this psycho-spiritual transformation, then one can talk about supramental transformation. So supramental transformation, psychic and spiritual, psychic transformation makes one like a saint. And thus, not saintly saint, we have our idea of a saint. Then the spiritual transformation changes us into a kind of seer. But not just a seer living on the heights, but in every level of our being. Something of that higher consciousness begins to express. But the body remains unchanged. They can help the body, but they cannot transform the body. So still the organs, physical organs, which are the last conduits, the eye, the ears. So they are the last point, the heart. So it will still limit the influx beyond a point. If you experience the descent of the higher consciousness, the heart may begin to go crazy, even the physical heart. There may be heartbeat. And I suspect, I have my reason to believe it, not going into it. I have seen people, even within the ashram setup, I have seen suddenly they start developing, you know, that kind of sudden heartbeats begin to become very fast, and most of the time it is not abnormal except that the rate is high and it sounds very strange and many people find it very difficult. And I have seen people's ECG done. We are not here to publish research or do that kind of study, but basically the physical organs, the brain, again it begins to limit beyond a point. It has its still natural limitation. Beyond a point, the memory begins to, the brain cells don't support that. I have seen, for example, in Amal Kiran and some other, one more Sadhika, I forget her name, Parsi lady. So, Amal Kiran specifically, he would forget what breakfast he took in the morning. And if you ask him, he'll say, huh, did I take the breakfast? He may forget the name. You ask him, Savitri. Lines after lines would flow. It's not that he had taken effort to memorize it. All that was so intact inside him. Certain things would be so intact. Suddenly intuition will come and strike on the spot. So that also happens. The organs have their natural limitation. And that's what we see how mother was, you know, during those days of physical transformation. So physical transformation, only the supramental consciousness can annihilate victoriously its difficulties, because physical body is supported by the subconscious. That's why when we read all the letters on transformation, Sri Aurobindo says, physical is the last, it's the crown only after nature has been prepared with all this. So psycho-spiritual transformation is Superman, if you want to put in very broad words. It's that consciousness which is wide, benevolent. I'm not going to specifically the Superman consciousness, but it creates a changed consciousness, transformed consciousness within. But the body is still human. It is still has possibilities of the human reactions. But the supramental is finally, even the very body changes. We see in Sri Aurobindo's life, the body could become completely light. It could not just as a anima, garima, siddhis, but in a natural way. And even the body was seen as transparent by Niruddha's sister. So all those things which were so amazing, even in food, all those changes finally leading to the very body cells holding the flame, that is the last supramental transformation. Sri Aurobindo gave a few thousand years. Actually, he says that 2,000 years or 3,000 years it may take. That's how he has said. Mother used the word 1,000 years. And then she says, okay, 300 years, because she saw that people are very... So supramental transformation of the body is the last thing. With that, but already we can start experiencing, even with a psycho-spiritual transformation, the nature of sleep changes. Even with supramental touch, the nature of sleep begins to change. Become more consciously, we begin to become aware of the dream. The nature of dreams change. So all this chaotic dreams, all kinds of dreams begin to become more and more conscious. The working actual operation of the intelligence. One can actually experience increase of memory with passing age, which is a paradox. Even increase of energy, capacities in walk, in gait, everything. So where shall I stop? There is no limit to it. So how is it to be done? Now there is a mechanical or a psycho-physical way, and there is the ultimate way. So mechanical way is to concentrate above the head. This is how people advocate, and it's very effective. If you concentrate, just like for psychic, one concentrates in the depth of the heart. For the spiritual transformation, one concentrates above the head, somewhere here. One doesn't have to see how many inches. Otherwise, we'll be calculating, sitting with a kind of ruler. It doesn't work like that. Automatically, the consciousness will go there. Just like concentration in the heart. Trying to be too much mechanically right is to be inwardly wrong. So, it's not about the number. Consciousness will not go anywhere else. If we concentrate above the head, it will go. It will take a station. There is no other way. We can try doing it and we'll see it. So, there when we concentrate above the head, and concentrate on one can do it on a form, image. I know only of mother, so, and that's what Sri Aurobindo recommends, form of the mother, name of the mother. One can also use the power of imagination, that there is a light and mother's peace which is descending. Initially, there would be just a feel-good factor, oh, peace, peace, some I feel very nice after this meditation. But when the peace actually descends, it's mind-blowing, literally. Because it's like ice, water challenge. I don't know who devised it. Literally, it's that experience. Except that you don't feel cold that way. But it's like a massive ice block entering inside. No, not with the impact of dhar. But it's absolutely like that ice entering. Everything becomes peaceful to the last cell. That's the experience of the descent of peace. But otherwise, peace, very nice. Peace is good. Oh, I sat, I felt so peaceful. All that is an effort to create an opening. At some point, there is an opening. And when that opening comes, it's like literally what is called in old yogas as kapal bhedan. And it was used to go beyond from the limited human mind. Because when people went into the beyond, they went into samadhi. But here it's changed. So one remains conscious. There is a tendency initially to go into samadhi. So concentration above the head is the method. And simpler, and what Sri Aurobindo constantly says is, open to the mother, give yourself to the mother. That's the best, because then psychic, spiritual, supramental transformation, it's one package. And the safest, because she knows. But the paradox again is, if once someone is trying to have transformation, then again, paradox, it doesn't work. Means one is motivated by the ego. I want to become a superman. Oh, how nice to have these powers, these faculties opening in us. The moment we do it, then the mind and the vital will play tricks. One can enter into what is called as intermediate zone. And one can start having experiences, none of which are true, which includes visions, voices, all kinds of things. So that's why the mother was, and Sri Aurobindo, were not keen to describe what kind of experiences. Though generally the descent is experienced as a thrill running through the whole body, but also through the spine. In classical Kundalini, it is through the spine. But in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, it's through the whole body. One experiences first in the head area, actually like a wave or a thrill passing through. Then in the neck and shoulders, it's easier to experience here. Then up to the chest. And then with time and with grace, right up to the feet it goes. At least to the, almost the ankles it can go. So this is the experience of the descent. And it is this descent which slowly changes the nature. After some time, you don't experience it like that. Don't look for the experience. Ah, when is it? Now where is the thrill? Where has it passed away? Because then it becomes normal and natural. It's like first time when water came, or light came in the village. Ah, light has come, you switch on. Now it becomes a way of life. Because 24 hours you have the current. So when one is fully open and the descent is taking place constantly, still there would be special descents, but one doesn't know when. It can happen most unexpectedly. It can happen while walking. It can happen while you are driving. It can happen very unexpectedly if one is surrendered to the mother. So once again, these are not experiences to be sought, because the moment we seek experiences, that means the ego is stepping in. What we have to do is, and we don't have to monitor ourselves, because first of all, it takes long. One has to be armed with patience, endurance, because resistances may rise up. When the lowest parts are touched, sexual impulses may rise, for example. And mother speaks about it. Ambitions may rise up. Because they are hidden inside this. Because truth consciousness uncovers everything. You can't say, I am a very sadhu bachcha. And if one gets unnerved, that's why she says, you have to persist, endure. And victory comes to the most persevering. So if one goes through it, thinking of the mother, turning to the mother, offering everything to the mother with the certitude of victory, with complete faith, then eventually, even the lowest ranges are completely, the difficulties are annihilated. And things vanish as if they never existed. So this is how the process takes place. Open to the mother more, open more and more to the mother, open integrally to the mother, give oneself to the mother, give with the thoughts, give one thoughts to the mother, think of the mother, with the heart, give one's feelings to the mother, love the mother. With the life, give one's life to the mother, live for the mother, serve the mother. With the body, let each gesture and posture be dedicated to the mother, from washing and bathing to walking and eating and sleeping, give to the mother. This is the key. So, if you look at the process, very difficult, long. But if you look at the method, very simple, simplest of simple. Okay, with these words, I'll close. James, if you have a quick question, otherwise we are anyways meeting for question answers on another day.
That's right. We're on the fourth day. We're meeting for questions and answers. So, thank you very, very much, Dr. Rock. It's a really illuminating session, and I'm sure everyone's benefited from it immensely.
One small thing, because I have not spoken much about the levels above the mind, because I believe Dr. Basu will touch them when I saw the subject. Yes, and second reason is that it is not so relevant now. The reason is, this question was asked to the mother, that, you know, these higher levels of mind. She said, no, now that the supermind is acting, it can act in any which way. You cannot bind it with any rule of the normal mental processes. So it's quite likely. So it's not like classical higher mind, you have this kind of cognition, then you have the illumined mind, intuitive mind, the over mind, which is a global cognition, which is about the cosmic self, and you can actually realize there the cosmic consciousness. But it's quite likely that with the super mind now acting directly on the human consciousness, and with the mind of light already being operative within man, it's like what mother has done is, the only word I can use, though I don't like to use that word much, is spiritual bypass. So these things are happening, and I see it within, and I see it in people. I have seen young people, I can just say 20 years, 22 years, 23 years, who experience, the only word I can use is cosmic consciousness. They experience a cosmic sentiment, they experience the sense of divine everywhere, in everyone, and this, they have not passed through higher mind, they have not passed through intuitive mind, but they have touched the over mind cognition. I have seen a 15-year-old come up with this idea, there is nothing else but the love in this creation. So, super mind is acting in a way which is beyond our comprehension. So, we cannot fix a limit to its, we can't fix a method to it, and that's why the more we open to the mother, and this is happening even without that. I know of a youngster who suddenly gave a very good talk on, you know, saying, 22-year-old youngster, that Alokda, you may be knowing what's happening to the young generation today, you know, we do all this, morning we get up and we, what is it called? Shots, what is it?
Reels.
And we, 60 reels, 70 reels, they're consuming and like a habit and all this. And says, blah, blah, I was also doing all this. And 1 year, everything has changed and completely gone. And the kind of poetry which has started emerging. I said, all that is very good. But how do you think it has come? And yes, yes, it's because of Mother and Shurvindo. And the person wants everybody to understand Mother and Shurvindo can do this magic. I say, it doesn't happen like that. Don't go like an evangelist preaching it. It happened. But it's a real thing. And the person wrote and said, Alokda, you may not be knowing what's happening. I said, I'm very well aware of what's happening in teenagers today. At heart, I'm also a teenager. Except that I don't consume these reels. So this is how it works. So it's broken all barriers, all norms and patterns. We must understand. That's a different subject altogether, which is about how the supermind is working and breaking all the known patterns, which includes pattern of health and illness. So we should be, that's a very vast subject, so I'm not going into it. Okay.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone. And we meet again tomorrow for Dr. Basu Mishra Basu. And then the final day is on Friday for the questions and answers session. So thank you, Dr. Locke.
Okay, thank you.
See you. Namaste to you all.
Thank you.
Mother's blessings.
Thank you.